Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the beautiful city of Angels as we react to an outstanding night in the NBA. Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything when it's game time. Have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, da,
bum, 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 bum. So here's what happens. I had what I thought was a very solid take on Steph Curry, which admits both his greatness and the flaw within his style that can be exposed because of the change in officiating in the playoffs. And when an NBA star like Kyle Kuzma picks it up, he either did not listen to the take and only read the headline, very possible, or simply had a completely different takeaway than ever actually listened, than my intent of the take. The take was this. Look, I admit that like many people, I underestimated what Steph Curry would be in the NBA. I thought my ending analysis the day of the draft when he was drafted was he would have a Jeff Hornacek-like career. Some point, some two, tremendous overall player, some great years, a lot of good, but could he play? He wasn't really seen as a dynamic point guard because he hadn't played the point much in college, only 1 year. And I wondered whether or not he could get by people, he could defend, and he could keep up with the physicality of the league. The league has evolved and changed. Some of that is his play. Some of that is their need for more offense. And obviously, he has benefited from it as the league has benefited from his stardom. But Kyle Kuzma tweets out, he has 3 rings, LOL. What am I reading? What am I reading this, right? And then I watched last night's game. I watched last night's game and I was kind of reaffirmed. Steph wasn't terrible, but he wasn't 45 point takeover. No one on the court could guard him, Steph. Obviously, Klay Thompson struggled. Andre Iguodala came back to earth. Sean Livingston looked well old. And they struggled to box out the stronger and tougher PJ Tucker, the nuisance that is CP3, James Harden did his James Harden thing. And the Houston Rockets really survived the Golden State Warriors. The Rockets went small with PJ Tucker at center. And that seemed to be just what the doctor ordered as the Warriors couldn't box out Tucker. He only got credited for 5 offensive rebounds, but he got far more than he just tipped out to somebody else. But my affirmation came from this. How many did Kevin Durant have last night? What, did he have like 35 last night? 34? It seems like when you watch Kevin Durant, you know how the story ends. He's going to end up with 30. Everything else is very much up in the air. You might get 15 or 18 or 20 from Steph. You might get 40. You might get 10, 12 from Clay, 15 from Clay, you might get 50. It's the wide variances, and that is, in fact, the difference. I stand by the fact that you can just mug and be physical. Even Steph Curry, look, I thought he was on the wrong side of a couple of non-calls where he drove in, and in the regular season, those would have been absolute and ones. Some of his jump shots in the perimeter where they challenged him and he fell down because he thought there was contact. Those would have been called fouls in the regular season. In the postseason, they would not. Now, of course, Steph made the big 3 to cut it to 2 with 11.5 seconds to go. And then James Harden missed the second free throw. and Kevin Durant had a chance to tie it. So did Steph. Neither made it, and the Houston Rockets survive. But I stand by that the officiating changed in the postseason, and that though the overall, the gross stats for Steph are the same, the individual game-by-game variances, hey, the game one and two against the Clippers, Kevin Durant had 21 and 23. 21 and 23. That's the fewest he scored this entire postseason. Whereas you look at Steph Curry, and all of a sudden 17, 18, 12, 21, those are all in the postseason, and those are all the fewest he scored this season as well. He's had these wild swings. Now, the law of averages mean he's probably going to have a 40-point game. And you would think Klay Thompson would as well. And it's hard to read Klay Thompson whether or not he's pouting because he's mad at himself, he's mad at the officials, or he's mad at not getting the ball. This, by the way, is one of the things that Klay Thompson was famous for before he became an NBA star, which is kind of a bad body language guy at times. Kevin Durant's regular season, 25.8 points per game. His postseason is 30.2 points per game. Steph, since Durant joined the Warriors, is 26 points per game, 26 points per game in the postseason. He was superhuman when everything revolved around him at times, and he's a little bit less superhuman when the ball goes through Kevin Durant. But it's allowed them to win the last two championships, which I don't think they would have won without him. And the Houston Rockets continue to force Kevin Durant to take and make big contested shots. And for the most part, he's come through. And Klay, and to a lesser extent, Steph, has not nearly as much. Look, I don't think it's simply that there's some flaw in Steph Curry. I think it's his body type. You can beat him up. I think it's the officiating. I think it's game planning and making somebody else beat you. I think it's the pace of the game in transition. He's better and there's more openings than when it's in the half court. I think all of these things combined. And then the fact that they are playing more through Kevin Durant because he's shown the ability to lead the way. He is running a little bit of a fever. That is, in fact, good basketball. Whoever's got it going, that's who you go to. And Kevin Durant's had it going. So context does matter, right? Somebody reads a text, somebody reads a tweet. What is the context to all of it? To Kyle Kuzma? It's not some indictment of Steph Curry, the player. It's just the reality of every year we seem to be getting here and people asking, what's the matter with Steph Curry? And the answer is nothing. He's the nature of when you shoot from the distance he shoots and how he plays and the toughness of the defense and the frailness at times, although stronger than he's ever been in his body. And he's going to have these swings. And with a small sample size, this is what happens. The larger the sample size, ultimately water will find its level and they'll be able to pick apart weaker opponents. The question is whether that'll happen before it's too late, as they're now tied two games apiece to the Houston Rockets. And if you think that this series isn't about who's pushing who and the physicality, I tell you, the voice of reason this whole thing is Draymond Green.
I think it's just a mindset. You know, I think we're kind of, we go into a fight thinking it's a fair fight, and it's not. They're doing whatever it takes to win. And not that they're like doing anything dirty or nothing like that, but they're doing whatever it takes to win. And we're just kind of rolling in, looking like, oh yeah, we'll box, and they slamming us. So we got to just change our mindset. And I think if we change our mindset, then we'll be just fine. But we haven't these last two games. And the first two games, I think it was the complete opposite. I think we were taking it to them, and they weren't really responding as far as the physicality went. And so that's the difference in this series. That's why it's 2-2. I know we'll change that, and it starts with me.
I couldn't agree more. And by the way, the best part of what Draymond Green said was, it starts with me, right? That really what missed the mark in the Kyrie Irving I took 22 shots, should have taken 30. Because I actually think if you listen to the entirety, and we'll play it for you, of what Kyrie said, there wasn't anything he said that was wrong. But all he could have avoided any sort of pitfall in a post-game comment and just said, we got to be better, it starts with me. Which is what Draymond Green did. Draymond Green is not as talented an offensive player as Kyrie Irving, but probably the reason that he's won more championships and he's seen a little bit more as a winning player is just a comment like that, even if it doesn't have to be a reality. Like, Draymond was plenty physical. It wasn't a wanton thing. You know, Kevin Durant, for all his skill, he's got to box out P.J. Tucker better. They have to rebound collectively as a team, not allow tip-outs, things they got in games one and game two. But they didn't. Klay Thompson can't be as affected by missing shots and by guys underneath him. And I'm guessing he will. But this whole discussion about guys, I think there are guys that choke under pressure? Yeah. Right now, I haven't seen any of that from the Warriors. I don't think it's a choking thing. I think this is the nature of shooters. Shooters are weird. They can go off, and there's no reason that the Houston Rockets should have missed 27 consecutive threes last year in Game 7. No reason that should have happened. But that's how shooters work. That's one of the things that happens with shooting threes, with shooting jump shots. It's one of those analytics be damned thing. You know, you can't explain why Kevin Durant, when he gets to 17 to 19 feet on the right side of the hoop, why he makes that shot more than 17 to 18 feet from any other part other than that's his spot. And with analytics, it's, hey, you got to take threes. You got to take, okay. The thing about missing jump shots, especially for great three-point shooters, is it does become contagious. There shouldn't be hot streaks. There shouldn't be cold streaks. There's just the percentage of times you make each individual shot, and it should not carry over. But we all know it does. Steph Curry will score 35 and 15. And then he'll average, you know, 26 a game, which he does in the regular season, which he does in the postseason. Durant will just score 30 a night in the playoffs and 26 a night in the regular season. You know, it's a consistency versus variety sort of thing. You know, stocks can be like this. The volatility of shooters is on display with the Golden State Warriors. And that's, by the way, why this all works. You got one guy that's consistent, kind of bucket getter, and just finds a way cumulatively to end up with somewhere in the 26 to 32 with 8 and 5. And then you got a guy, two other guys that can give you 40 or might give you 15.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Tom Brady looking like, well, Tom Brady had Giselle alongside him, just elegant, kind of America's first couple, right? Then there was Odell Beckham Jr. I would describe his suit as part, was it kilt or were those shorts? It felt like a kilt. Kilt meets... No, it wasn't Joe Dirt. It was Ricky Vaughn from Major League. You know, we wear sleeves and hats at this level, Vaughn, right? You had no sleeves. And, like, I mean, I get it. There are some women's outfits that go over the top. So if there's, like, dudes out, like, why we as dudes have to wear, you know, a black suit or a different colored suit and some loafers? Like, I'm not going to sit here and crush it. On the other hand, it was very much a look-at-me moment, right? He felt very kind of underdressed for the moment. I don't know.
The boots, and almost like the socks were almost stirrup-like because they had, like, a white band around them, you know, coloring.
And I guess it does the trick. Like, the idea is to get us talking about him, and we're talking about him. Yeah. Then, of course, he said, we're going to build the new England Patriots. And I was thinking to myself... You're the anti-New England Patriots, right? Like, the New England Patriots, they've done it time and again, and they've never really talked about doing it. They put team above self. They have, with the exception, obviously, of something like this with Brady, they've maintained a distance from many of the spotlights. And I would also tell you that no one goes into an NFL season thinking they're going to stink. Because if you do, you are going to stink. You know? But the lack of self-awareness from Odell Beckham Jr., doesn't it just feel like there's a massive letdown coming? Because they have, on paper, man, they got some dudes that you like. But we pointed out that most of the success Baker Mayfield had was against the bottom of the league defensively. That when he played the good teams, it was 11 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. That he's below 500 as a starting quarterback. And I get it. It's a team that didn't win this game the year before. But they had some talent last year. And they did not play the toughest schedule. And the teams that they beat were the bottom of the NFL. And now all of a sudden, there's going to be new challenges. Everybody, no one's taking any sort of weeks off in prepping for the Browns games. I don't know. I looked at that suit. I listened to the comments. And I'm actually pro-Baker as opposed to Cowherd, who seems anti-Baker, in terms of his leadership quotient. But there's a skill quotient at quarterback. He is a smaller quarterback. He's not a great athlete. And none of these guys have won anything before. Even OBJ, he's played in one playoff game, and that was a loss for the New York Giants. And they're talking about being the Patriots? How about just getting back to where the Browns were playoff teams?
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Kyrie Irving, after shooting just 7 of 22 from the floor, he went on a long and winding answer. And, like, look, when we contextualize it with all that he said, it wasn't that bad. But it also wasn't exactly that good. You know? He goes on and says, hey, I should have taken 30 shots. You're like, what? Now, I'll point out to you, I get what he is saying. He's like, the essence of what he was saying is, it has nothing to do with the number of shots. We didn't lose because the number of shots I took. You know? Like, what Kyrie Irving, who's a very bright guy and a freak with the basketball, should be saying is, hey, whether it's 22 or 30, it's got to be the right shots. I got to be willing to take them and make them, but I got to take the right shots and make the right reads in the right place. I'm not always doing it, but, you know, it's a team collective thing. Like, I could take 30 shots. Wouldn't. And if I took the 30 right shots and only made 10, I'd be okay with it. That's actually not an unreasonable statement, and that's kind of what he said. But the problem is they have a superstar who does not appear to be fully invested in staying in the city, regardless of what he's saying. You have other players who we've wildly overrated before they've actually done anything in the NBA, Jason Tatum, for example. Like, we conflate the argument of, did they win the Jason Tatum, Markelle Fultz trade? Yes. And you could make the argument that Tatum was the second or third best player in that entire draft. Of course, he went third. And Donovan Mitchell has to be the best player in that draft as of to this date. But you can say, hey, we got a great player and he's going to be really good, and point out that he's not nearly as good as his reputation that got a little bit of ahead of him. I mean, look, Terry Rozier, scary Terry, came in as a backup last year and gave them some outstanding performances. He has not performed at that level this year. He has gotten back to backup Terry Rozier, probably not a starter in the NBA. Gordon Hayward, a contract that at the time was celebrated because he was the free agency gem going back 2 years ago. But then, of course, the injury, and now he's playing on minutes he probably doesn't deserve, and they're just hoping that just one game of the old Gordon Hayward will reemerge. Like, the most Patriot-like guy is Al Horford, to be honest. A guy who just does what he's supposed to do and gets more out of his actual ability than he should. He's tough, he's smart, and he continues to evolve as a three-point shooter and a very good passer. But there's limitations to his talent, which is a lot like many of the New England Patriots. Brad's not terse with the media the way that Belichick is, but Belichick does seem to relate a little bit better to the common NFL player than Brad Stevens does to the common NBA player. I know we want the Celtics and the Patriots to be run similarly, to look the same, to feel the same. Like, oh, those Boston teams, they all, but they're not. And yeah, the Houston Rockets and the Houston Astros have continuously come up short in the playoffs. And maybe the innovative way in which the Rockets have decided to embrace analytics for the most part is the way in which the Astros have already obviously decided to embrace, and maybe the Texans, who have let us down time and again in the playoffs, maybe that's, hey, trying to use Deshaun Watson's unique skill set. Maybe that's their kind of new age way of thinking. But this idea that all Boston teams, all Houston teams, all Chicago teams, all LA teams, you just take those two teams. Celtics want to be the Patriots. They're just not. Because the Patriots wouldn't be answering questions about how many attempts they, instead of, we're on to Milwaukee. There is a brilliance and a genius to doing it, to walking the walk and not talking the talk. I don't know, the Kyrie thing is fascinating because I do think that he's a freak talent. He's a top five, top 10 NBA talent. He's not a top five, top 10 NBA leader, but he's a top five, top 10 NBA talent. I don't think the rest of their team is that talented. I just don't. I mean, Jason Tatum could be a very good player. Could eventually become an all-star. Maybe a star player. Who knows? Maybe a superstar. But like, we freaked out seeing him in a small sample size last year, and now the people have a book on him. They attack him defensively. He's not making as many shots or making the right plays, and he seems to have tapered off. Some of that is the ball dominance of Kyrie Irving. And look, I like Jalen Rose. I think he does a really good job, but he made it out like they used to play like the Golden State Warriors, pace and space. Like, no, they didn't. Who's ever been the lead guard for this team has gotten the opportunities that Kyrie Irving's getting. Isaiah Thomas got them 2 years ago. The East has gotten much, much better, and the Celtics have not matched the rise of talent of the other teams, period. And they lack the cohesion of the team they're playing against. Jason Tatum averaged 14 points a game 14 points a game in the regular season last year. In the postseason, he played 19 games. He averaged 18.5 points per game, which for a rookie was outstanding. We made him into the next Kevin Durant, the next Michael Jordan. Instead of understanding, hey, much like in football, rookie quarterbacks come around for their second year and everybody has a book on him. People have a book on Jason Tatum. Oh, he worked out with Kobe Bryant in the offseason once in front of television cameras. That does not a career make. So some of it's about opportunity. Some of it's about the difficulty in playing with Kyrie. Some of it's also about the opponent. Like, this is what Milwaukee does. Milwaukee's a really well-built team, a really well-coached team that over 82 games played better defense than any other team in the NBA. So it shouldn't surprise us that through four games, they've played better defense and frustrated the Boston Celtics three of those four times.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Here's what you guys have no idea about. Okay, Rick Bucher's our guest, Bleacher Report, Fox Sports 1. And I don't even know if he remembers. Do you remember when you used to come on with me on game night, what we do every time you come on?
No.
I would ask you a rock and roll question, and you would research it and give me an answer the next week.
I do remember that.
Right?
Now.
I asked you what the Casbah was,
yes,
and why Sharif didn't like it.
Yes.
And you explained it to me that it was a club in New York, right?
Yep.
And Sharif was like the manager of a club, and he didn't, right? But of course, now I've seen the Frankie Mercury movie, so I know the answers to that one, to any of the Queen questions,
right,
I believe.
Right,
or at
right.
least, I'm going to take the Queen movie as law, right?
Right. That's always dangerous. Right. You're going to take any movie as a documentary.
Rick Bucher joining us. Buke, I know your expertise is as a longtime NBA insider.
But
I got to ask you, you're a former soccer player.
Yeah.
Do you like winning and advancing on aggregate?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, basically, you're just saying we're playing over the course of 180 minutes rather than 90. So, yeah, no.
They played twice, though. They
right.
Barcelona and Liverpool played twice.
Right.
Barcelona beat them 3-0 at their place.
Right.
Lost 4-0.
Right.
On like a little sneak attack goal there in the 79th minute.
Okay.
Like, so that's how we had decided a champion?
Why is that bothering you so much?
We don't
much?
Do that here. If we did...
Let's get all jingoisty now. If we don't do it in the U.S., well, then it must be wrong.
No, but if it doesn't make any sense. You're trying to decide who's better, right?
Yes. Over the course of two games.
Why over the course of two games? Why not three games, right? Like, if we do rock, paper, scissors,
right.
we do best of three, best of five. We don't do best
of two.
That's
a whole
other... Well, I was so good with my use of paper that I had to win that game.
Okay, so where are we playing the third match?
Who cares?
It does matter, because if you're playing home and away, and or the whatever the location is, it has a huge impact in the game of soccer. It may not... Actually, I think it does in basketball, or can, depending on the dimensions or the way what the background on the baskets are or whatever. But that's why you play seven rather than five or three in basketball.
But like they're showing in the first match in May, right?
Yes.
They played each other earlier in May.
Right.
That Barca missed like a wide, it should have been an easy goal.
Right.
Up 3-0.
Right.
Shouldn't matter, but you do. And so all of a sudden now you're like, oh, now you get to event.
But see, this is the whole point, which is you don't give away goals in this situation. You take advantage of everyone rather than we're just going to play. You know what? We're going to win 1-0. And then let's say we score a goal in the next one.
Yeah, put everybody back on defense.
Now we just pack it in and we don't play anymore. This avoids that.
All right. That's actually your strongest argument. The idea of the 90.
I didn't know I was going to be debating this walking in.
It just happened, and I was like, this is the dumbest thing ever. This is dumb.
That is a snap reaction that's not necessarily accurate.
I think it's pretty accurate, there's a reason that we don't
copy
it.
Ugly American reaction is what that is.
It's an educated sports fan American reaction.
Put American further further in the sentence, and maybe we can talk.
Okay, let's work in chronological order of last night.
Okay.
Was last night more about the Celtics or the Bucks?
Celtics. This is what, look, the Bucks are better than I gave them credit for. But the Celtics are making it easy for the Bucks. If I see Giannis Antetokounmpo drive one more time and plant right on the left side of the floor, and the second defender doesn't close, knowing that the spin is coming, knowing that it's coming, I'm going to lose my mind. How many times does he have to do that? There's no other move that he makes when he makes that move. And yet, every time I look, the second defender is like 8 feet away. You're not going to be able to bother him waving at the ball. You need to be there physically. They did more of that in game one. They haven't done any of that since.
Well, in fairness, you're also, when you're guarding a shooter, you're like,
you don't have to worry about that with him.
No, but I'm saying when you're guarding a shooter, you're the second guy. If you're guarding Chris Middleton, you're guarding Ariane Ilyasova. Like, I would leave Brook Lopez and make him make 10 threes, but regardless of which, like, I do think it's a little bit harder. You don't just leave guys to double team them. You have to be smart about it.
No, but you can, again, and this is why, and I've talked about it a lot today, where I have a lot of questions for Brad Stevens.
I do too.
He calls a lot of timeouts at the perfect time. He's like, okay, and what are we going to have? And they come out of it, and nothing's changed. Nothing's changed defensively. Nothing has changed offensively. They have the talent, and we've seen them at times where that talent has played together, like the Bucks are playing together right now. But that's not what I see. I see guys taking turns trying to win it themselves. How is that happening at this point?
That's what they did last year. That's what they did the year before. It was, let's watch Isaiah Thomas, and then we'll take turns when Isaiah Thomas doesn't have it. That's actually kind of been his offensive style. It's been his MO. The difference is, I would agree with you, their defense isn't as good.
Exactly. And so, collectively, even then, they moved. It wasn't all Isaiah Thomas. The ball at least moved. There was a lot more motion. I don't see any of that. I see guys coming down, literally, going 1-on-3, thinking that they're going to score themselves. Especially in situations yesterday where Kyrie, the genius in basketball, is down by double digits, and I'm coming down 1-on-3, and I'm going to take a difficult step back fadeaway. Even if you make that in that situation, you haven't accomplished anything. You need to get everybody involved offensively to make them work and to make everybody feel good about going back and playing defense.
Any chance he stays?
That's the one that I have the least feel about, but I would say I do not expect him to stay. I thought that there was a chance if they made a great run and they came together, because there's a lot of reasons for him to stay. There's more reasons for him to stay there than there are for Kevin Durant to stay in Golden State. But that said, they're not making good on those reasons, and I've heard so much about Kyrie being a cancer. Yeah. In that locker room. I hate using that word, you know, casually, but being a cancer in that locker room, that my inclination is to think he's going to go someplace else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird, like, I'm trying to think. I mean, Kyle Lowry, I think, has been hurt by the playoffs, but in terms of superstars, Kyrie has really, and it's the things that he says and the way in which he says them. Like, I understand you know more about basketball than the people that are asking you questions.
Right.
I think we all kind of know.
Sure.
But you don't have to be so condescending.
No, and you don't have to compound it by not playing like a genius.
Yes.
I mean, the game that he played was not a smart. You don't have to be a basketball genius. You don't have to be a basketball savant to know that the way that he played in game four was not a smart way to approach that game. We've seen guys. George Hill played a more balanced, thoughtful game than Kyrie Irving did.
Rick Bucher from Bleacher Report joining us. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's get to Rockets-Warriors. Obviously, the move of Mike D'Antoni moving P.J. Tucker to center has been an outstanding move. The offensive rebound and the tip-outs from P.J. Tucker, just the toughness of P.J. Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means using Austin Rivers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get Austin Rivers, you get the Clipper backcourt there to go with James Harden and Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker, and that's been a problem. Let's start, for me, with Steph Curry. I've operated on this premise that, look, I think Steph's great,
mm-hmm.
but the physicality of the playoffs is a lot for the way in which he plays, and it's one of the reasons that he's had some of these clunkers in other NBA playoff years.
I agree, but I do believe, and I was listening to you earlier, I do believe that the physical issues that he has or has had in these runs are a part of his struggles. When 100%, look, when we think of the Kyrie Irving shot, or we think of Kevin Love being able to stay in front of him, if he doesn't have a bad knee, he's going by Kevin Love. He proved that the following year. So I do believe that the physical issues that he's had at the end of the year are compromising him, and he has to be as close. He's one of those guys who has to be close to 100% because he is 6'2", because he is 190. He needs to have the ambidexterity of both hands. So a dislocated finger, even if it's on his non-shooting hand, is still an issue for him in his game. He needs to have two good ankles to be able to finish going either way and to have that zigzag to get his shot. So I can't separate the two. But there's also, in this instance, the fact that he's playing 43 minutes, there is no bench, there are no other playmakers.
They didn't fix the bench.
No, they did not.
They didn't fix. You and I talked about this last year. I was like, they got to fix that bench because it's going to get them beat. And they did not. They did not really address it. They went and got DeMarcus Cousins, which was like an impulse buy.
Right.
And
right.
I didn't think it fit who they were. And instead, you know, like, how about getting a backup point guard?
Right.
They have Quinn Cook. They won't play him because he's not good enough for the series.
No, and they weren't willing to pay Patrick McCall.
Yeah.
Now, Patrick McCall, you can look at the numbers. You can say he was this or that. But he played in big games, and he gave you valuable minutes in big games. They would love to have somebody that they could count on. You can't count on Kevon Looney or Jordan Bell or Quinn Cook or Alphonso McKinney. And maybe McCall couldn't get it done, but he's demonstrated that he can. So you could at least play that card. They played their bench 46 minutes in last night's game and still lost. To me, last night was the gambit of Steve Kerr saying, we got to find a way to make this a short series because the other one's going to be long.
Right.
So if we can get this over in five, now we can at least rest and I can continue to play my death lineup, my Hampton five. Now they lost and they've got to continue to play them. It's a matter of diminishing returns right now for the Warriors.
Yeah, it's going to be fast. Let me quickly get you to Dan Beyer, get an update. We'll come back to some Warriors discussion, maybe a little Lakers discussion, a little Rockets discussion. Dan, what do you got?
Yeah, we got a lot happening, especially in the Champions League as the day started with FC Barcelona up 3-0 on Liverpool. It was the second leg of their Champions League semifinal. Then this ended up happening.
Milner is far too crafty to let Barcelona get on the ball here. It's over. It's done. It's a sensation at Anfield. Liverpool have pulled it out of the fire.
They win 4-0 on TNT at BR Live as Liverpool grabs that second leg and then wins 4-3 on aggregate to advance to the Champions League final. Eastern Conference semifinals, game 5 tonight. Sixers and Raptors, 8 Eastern. Series tied up at 2. Blazers and Nuggets tip at 10:30 Eastern. That series is tied up at 2 apiece. A report from ESPN says that Raptors forward Kawhi Leonard is considering re-signing with Toronto this offseason. Former NFL linebacker and former Packers assistant Winston Moss, the new head coach of the XFL franchise in LA. Kentucky Derby champion Country House will not run in the Preakness after the horse became ill. We'll be back to the Doug Gottlieb Show in 10 seconds, but first a word from Farmers.
At Farmers Insurance, we know every windshield collision has a unique sound. Beetle. Bird poop. Drone. Seen it, covered it. Talk to Farmers.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
So just so you know, horse racing, the real Kentucky Derby winner, the horse that actually finished first, not going to run. And the other Kentucky Derby winner that was the long shot that was awarded the victory, also not going to run. How'd you like to have I'm going to go with the Preakness. Because, you know, at least at the Preakness, you get to watch the Kentucky Derby winner, right? That's the Belmont is usually the gamble. The Belmont, you don't know if you're going to have a triple crown threat. Usually the Preakness, you know, at least I'll have a Kentucky Derby winner. You have neither of the top two horses.
I just need to know if Bodie Express is running. Because Bodie Express was in the Kentucky Derby. Bodie Express had never won a race. Well, how does that happen? It's the Kentucky Derby. Like, I thought this was the creme de la creme. Like, and you got a horse that's never won a race.
It's what Hall of Famers,
in the Kentucky Derby.
It's what Hall of Famers think when they see Tracy McGrady walking in. They're man, you didn't win a playoff series?
By the way.
Playoff series?
By the way, not to circle back on the soccer, but the goal that ended up being the differential.
Yeah, it was amazing.
The fact that Barcelona didn't even defend. It was so disrespectful. Well, they deserved to be out. That was horrible.
They were faked out. They were deked.
Well, the other thing I saw was, this isn't a charity. I grew up in Cincinnati. So yeah. Cincinnati has an expansion MLS team.
Yeah.
They just fired their coach. It's 11 games into the season. You talk about being prisoners of the moment. You're an expansion team. You just joined the league and your coach out. Oh, my goodness.
Rick Bucher, soccer analyst, basketball insider for Bleacher Report and Fox Sports. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, so now Woj had a report yesterday that they're preparing for a seismic change.
Yeah.
Which means KD's gone.
Mm.
Are we sure?
Well, are we sure of anything?
I don't know. Like, you know that of all the teams you know in the NBA, you know a lot of them.
Yeah.
That one you know probably better
yes.
than
Yes. I will tell you this. The Warriors are expecting him to leave. I've been told by people in the organization. They're expecting him to leave.
Why are all these guys... Here's a question I really want to know. Why are they all so weird? Right? Like
Which guys? KD?
KD's weird. Kyrie's super weird. Carl Anthony Towns, very weird. There's a lot of guys, and maybe it's because they're really smart, and they think they're a little smarter than they are, but they're pretty bright, and they have other interests. I don't know. I feel like there's a bunch of kind of weird dudes.
Here's the reality. Well, look, Magic Johnson.
LeBron James is weird. LeBron James showed up at a game,
yeah,
buzzed, drinking wine,
yes,
and didn't think it was a big deal.
Yes,
that's weird.
Magic Johnson at his age, is president of the Lakers, and he decided impromptu to have a press conference right before a game and say, I'm out of here, without telling anybody. That's weird.
Yes.
Superstars are weird. They're weird.
Yeah.
The difference is we now get to see all of their weirdness. Thank the social media.
That's a good
thanks
take.
To the 24/7.
That's a good take.
Like, they've always been weird. They've always been weird.
Like rock stars?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I mean, there's a certain lunacy that comes with that just crazy excellence in one thing, right? The rest of them is Kobe Bryant is weird.
Weird, dude.
Like, I mean, go
he's
down
weird,
the line.
Dude. Yeah. That's a very strong point you made there. Really kind of impressive there. I almost feel like it's a drop the mic moment, but I don't. Okay, so any chance they lose Clay?
No.
Is he a max guy? Like, you're going to...
Well, they won't lose him, but like if KD leaves, or when KD leaves, the championships, the dynasty is over. Like, that's done. And... you may end up...
But wait.
This is going to be... You know what it's going to be?
If we're told we got a two-time MVP.
Right.
And we got... Klay Thompson is well-regarded as maybe the best catch-and-shoot shooter of all time, or in that conversation.
Yeah.
Draymond Green, who I'm told is a Hall of Famer, I think he's like the perfect Swiss Army knife for the way in which they play.
He may be, but because he was the perfect Swiss Army knife with that team and demonstrated
like
on a big stage, he'll be a Hall of Famer.
Oh, okay, so you have three. You'll still have three Hall of Famers.
Yes.
Now, Iguodala on his last legs. Sean Livingston's washed. They have no bench. They'll have a little bit of cap space, but not a lot, and no important draft pick. Like, how do you? But shouldn't that be? Aren't we told you got two superstars? And another Hall of Famer, shouldn't that be enough?
They may have three of the most unique superstars that you could possibly have. I mean, honestly, you just talked about Tracy McGrady being a Hall of Famer, okay? So their Hall of Famers come in different packages.
Yeah, but when you have three on one team.
Yeah, but how much is that? How much of that is because of what they've collectively accomplished?
I agree.
It's the reason why
they're
all All-Stars.
I understand. And I also think that the league, one of the things that we're learning is the league was catching up to them. Right?
Has caught up to them.
Was catching up to them even before they went and got KD. And that KD kept the league at bay a little bit.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay. But I don't know if the common man or the common fan thinks that. They think you guys don't know how good Steph is. You play through Steph and you'll be fine.
I live in the Bay Area. They think, okay, KD, you know what? You're going to leave. We're good. We were a champion before you got here. We'll be a champion when you leave. What was their strength in numbers?
Yes.
Their depth and their versatility.
They lost the depth when they got KD.
And that, well, they were losing it already.
Right, because Bogut
was gone. Andre Iguodala is not the same. Most Spates. But you have guys that are there that are not the same.
Right.
Sean Livingston is not the same.
Correct.
Andre Iguodala is not the same.
Right.
They used to have a second five that people said, and maybe it was a little overblown.
It was overblown.
They
could beat people.
A second starting five.
Oh, yeah, they could beat people.
Nonetheless, when they went to their bench would often expand the lead. Now they can't even afford to go to their
bench. Well, here's the thing people forget. The first year they won championships, there was like 30-something fourth quarters that Steph Curry didn't even play in.
Right.
Didn't play in.
Right.
They didn't have to because they were, one, dominating the league, and then, two, they had such a good bench that they wouldn't have to put him back in.
You were able to put... at all times, between Bogut, Draymond Green at his defensive best, Klay Thompson, who was still making his bones in the league, you could put four excellent defenders around Steph.
Yeah, and he could just roam and get steals.
Now, I'm watching the game last night. They were attacking Klay Thompson and getting things done. They were attacking Draymond Green and getting things done. The only guy they didn't attack was Kevin Durant. That was the one time where I'd see a matchup and they'd go, oh, we got to have something better than this.
I was really impressed by KD stepping up, saying, I want to guard James Harden there at the end of the game. I thought Klay did a little better job than you're giving him credit, but yes, they
But he hasn't been the same. He hasn't been the same this year as a defensive player. At times he has been.
Yeah, which brings me to are you really going to max him out?
Well, again, he's the perfect complement to Steph. So it's you're maxing him out or you're doing what it takes to keep him. Because of what he means to your particular team. It's the same with Draymond Green.
Yep.
He's not more valuable to anybody else than he is to them.
Okay, so now you have the Lakers. Let's assume Ty Lue. Does Tibbs take the assistant job?
Okay. So he does. Okay. This is my problem with this story. And I'm calling Frank Isola out on this, who is a Tibbs guy, who is a Jeff Van Gundy family tree guy. You can talk about how Tibbs might get this job. That's fine. But you have to acknowledge that it would be a huge plus for Tibbs because he was an absolute disaster in Minnesota. Yeah. Don't play this like, oh, you know what? LeBron thinks Tibbs would be perfect for their team because he could speak to the team. Yeah, you know what? I think he's a nice compliment just as he was with Doc Rivers. He would be a nice compliment with Ty Lue. But he would be back in his place as an assistant coach. And here's the other part. How good was he in coaching defense to really young players? I know how he was with veterans in Boston, but this is a young team that needs to learn how to play defense. That's what he was supposed to do in Minnesota. So let's just slow our roll a little bit on, do you think the Lakers would be lucky enough to get Tom Thibodeau? And I mean no disrespect to Tom, but it's just like the way that this is being portrayed. And I say this because Isola was calling Joe Vardon out because he put out the thing that LeBron James, talked to Ty Lue, but wasn't involved in the process of selecting Ty Lue or assigning Ty Lue. And Frank said, Joey, come on, do yourself a favor. We know that he was involved. Like, don't even advertise that. I'm saying to you, Frank, don't advertise this deal like Tibbs would be found gold for the Lakers. He'd be lucky to get that job because he needs to rehab his image.
All right, real quickly, who comes to the Lakers?
As free agents?
Yeah.
You tell me. I haven't heard a single name that says that's the destination that I want. That's the place that I want to go. Kemba Walker's probably going to get maxed out in Charlotte and is going to know, like Damian Lillard, it may be a small market. I may never play for a championship, but I'm king here. So why should I go someplace else where I know that I'm not?
And if he's going to leave, he'd go to New York.
If he was, yes. Yeah. Jimmy Butler, I've heard, has had more conversations with Kevin Durant in playing in New York than he has playing with LeBron in LA. And that wasn't even on his original list when he was looking at big market teams. It was Miami, Clippers, Nets, and Knicks. So I don't know. Do they find a way to convince Tobias Harris to come down there? My expectation is not necessarily that they're going to be able to sign some big name free agent, but that they're going to be able to make a deal for a big name free agent who has a big contract, who may have outlived his usefulness there, but could be valuable someplace else. If the Warriors decide that Draymond Green is too expensive and they don't want to extend him,
right,
and they want to move on, maybe that's a possibility. Or if Chris Paul, if the Rockets just get nothing done and they say we need to start over, we can't have 70% of our salary cap
in three guys,
you know, right, on three guys, maybe that's what happens. You're going to have to look for somebody, as Don Nelson used to say, I'm just looking for a rich man in trouble.
That's the voice of Rick Bucher. Great stuff, man, and especially really good with the they're all weird take.